Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, welcome to On the Sporting Couch, a psychological profile of a well-known sportsman or woman. I'm Gary Bloom, a sports psychotherapist, and that means I work one-to-one with all sorts of people who are having or have had problems in their personal lives. It's sometimes called a talking therapy. The show hopefully gives a flavour of what goes on between the therapist, me, and the person who today is on the sporting couch. Meet Steve Harmison, one of the finest pace bowlers this country has produced in the past couple of decades. He bowled for England in more than 120 games, including Tests, One Day Internationals and even T20. He took more than 200 wickets in a career that was severely affected by depression, anxiety and homesickness. Welcome to On the Sporting Couch. I'm Gary Bloom. With me, Steve Harmison, who said to me, playing international cricket was the best of times and the worst of times.
I don't take a great deal seriously. But, you know, there are things going on inside that haven't been right throughout the course of my career. But I look back at things and think, well, that's the cards I was dealt. I'm quite philosophical in that way, where I try not to let it get me down. You know, when I was at my darkest, couldn't get off the floor. Literally lying on the floor for like 6-7 hours, just, you know, basically tried to teach, telling my kids that I've got a bad back because I'm on my stomach, trying to like, and it was just because of the sort of anxiety inside me, the pit of my stomach was hurting that much, and it was hurting us that much. The anxiety was there, but that's my life. That's the way I've lived my life, and I feel as though I've gone through it, and I've come out the other side, not getting rid of them feelings, but I've been able to manage it, and manage it, you know, reasonably well.
What does it feel like to be having the words to be able to describe what you're going through, Steve? Because many people just don't have the words. You do.
No, it's. I think if you hit it head on and you don't get frightened by it. I was frightened by it first up, and then I seen somebody at a hospital in Manchester, and we had a chat, and he was great, and he didn't know me, didn't know sport, didn't know anything. I was playing cricket at the time. I was actually number one on the world bowling rankings at the time. And I think there's only Jimmy Anderson and Ian Botham ever with all the rankings have been out. So that tells you at the level I was performing in my career from a professional point of view. But from a personal point of view, or not a personal point of view, an inside point of view, I had anxieties like you'd never believe.
You know, I tell you what's the biggest... Sorry to jump in, Steve. I think the biggest shock that I've realised with you is when you were at the Priory in Manchester and you saw a psychiatrist, a psychologist there, you said to me, I only saw him for 6 sessions. And given the severity of the symptoms you have described for me, I was a bit surprised because somebody displaying your sort of symptoms, I would have thought you'd have said to me, Gary, I was in therapy for a couple of years.
The true answer to that is it was probably 6 sessions over a couple of years because of I would see him before I go away. At the time, I think you're looking at playing for England at that time. You spent, I think there was 1 year we spent just under 300 nights in hotel rooms out of 365 days. Mm. Yeah, from October the 1st to end of September. So fitting it in and seeing somebody was always very, very difficult. I'd have the odd communication with him, but it was more making sure medications at what I need to have to get myself in a position to train, to get myself in a position to play, but also in a position to live my life. And, you know, with, you know, the four children I have, and making sure that I felt good enough inside. Because the first time I saw him, I was alarmed.
Why were you alarmed?
Because the person sat in front of me said, have you thought about self-harming? Basically, have you thought about taking your own life? And I didn't feel that I'd got to that point. I really didn't. I thought there was times where you just think, I just wish I wasn't here anymore. I just wish it would all go away when you're on tour. But not to the point where you had thoughts of, I wish I wasn't here anymore. I wish it wasn't being me. I wish it wasn't that. But not to the actual point where you thought, I'm going to do something about it. And I think that was a... I think because of getting to see the psychiatrist, I probably got to see him just at the right time. I probably had thoughts where I wish I wasn't there anymore. I didn't feel as though I was in a position where I could go through with it or...
So I think what you're saying to me, Steve, if I can paraphrase, is I had the thoughts, but there was no way that I would have acted them through.
Yeah,
is that correct?
I think that. I think you probably had the thoughts, because I think that's the way you were and that's where I was and I felt, but to go through and, you know, the family I have and everything I had, that quickly brought me back into a moment which was out the darker side. And I don't know. I honestly really don't know if one, I would have had the guts to do anything like that. Two, if I had them, you know, that thought of taking your own life, I think there's a long process to get to that point. And I possibly was not quite within a quarter of that, possibly half of that, to ever get to the point where I think if you get beyond that, you are in serious trouble.
I think it's worth pointing out at this stage, with people who are thinking of suicide, that those thoughts are a disease. Where an area of your brain, the logical part of your brain, thinking through the consequences of what you're doing, has been switched off. Mm. And the area of your brain which is feeding those fantasies is very much in control. Does that model make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes more sense to me than, you know, probably that I was trying to describe it. And I felt going to see the doctor at the time was probably just at the right time. Medication he put me on didn't work at first. I had an accident in the car, which probably was down to more my driving, but also having the medication that was with it. That gave me a little bit of a fright. It really did. So we then went on to something different, and then that something different was... That worked, and it worked, and it helped me get myself in a position to be active.
The accident you had in your car, Steve, did you have the accident because the medication made you drowsy?
I honestly don't know.
Then how do you know the medication was the reason you had the
because
accident?
Because it happened within the first 3 days of taking that medication, so I wasn't sure if it was the medication, poor driving, combination of both.
Steve, you're still on meds to this day. Do you see a day in the future where you'll come off them?
I'm not exactly sure, is my 100% answer. I think a couple of times I've tried to come off them and I felt a bit different and felt a bit anxious. And whether that had anything to do with coming off them or whether I still needed the medication, I wasn't exactly sure. But what I do know is that at the minute, it's not too bad. There's only a couple of times where I really feel a bit down and anxious, and it's times of the year more than anything else.
When are you at your worst?
I'm not at my worst when sort of the season finishes and the work dries up a little bit, so I feel as though I'm in a good place at this moment in time. When I struggle is when you go to the next level, it's a downtime. I know in the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks there's going to be a little bit of a jittery period, because I'm going out to India for 3 weeks, and that brings the unknown. My problem is when I'm in my own head, spend time by myself, and I'm not working. I'm not around people, and I'm at home, and you know, then all of a sudden the mind goes wandering. Alcohol intake goes up, which probably doesn't help. All that factor normally comes October, November, when cricket season's finishing, and then yeah, you pick yourself up going into sort of Christmas time. Normally, I go on holiday with the family in and around the sort of December, January period. And then you bounce into sort of end of February, all of March, going into, well, leading into the cricket season, which is a lot of work, being from a social dinner aspect, because cricket clubs are trying to raise money. Your after dinner speaking goes up a little bit. All that comes with my life at this moment in time. So that dark period is when, it's normally, I always look at it as when the clocks go back. That's when I change a little bit, because I don't have as much work. I then become very introverted, and that's when I struggle a little bit. And I think it's more my own doing than the thoughts of myself, more and more and more. And then it just, it's like, I've always believed that the sort of the anxiety and the mental health issue comes when, for me personally, when one bad day turns into two bad days, two turns into three, and it never evens out. It just continuously goes down, and that's where I always seem to struggle. And that normally becomes through when I spend time by myself.
What you very eloquently describe is what we therapists would call thinking about thinking.
Mm.
And then you end up going round in circles.
Yeah, I would say that, because I would imagine, you know, when I feel, when I'm having an indifferent day, the first song that I listen to on the radio when I get in the car, bang, I can't sleep at night, because that's going at like 1,000 miles an hour in my head. I can't sleep at night, and then I'm tired, wake up the next morning, and it just repeats itself the next day, and then it repeats itself the next day, and constantly thinking about things and worrying about things. And you know, they've got 4 children, and have they got what they need, and the anxieties of that all comes on top of you. And that doesn't help finishing playing cricket. Cricket's an interesting sport when it comes to, from the mental health issue, because they don't earn the money the footballers earn, don't earn the money the golfers earn, they don't earn the big bucks. If you play cricket for England, you get well looked after, but it's not what it was years gone by. It was a 6-month contract. You know, a while ago, you know, when I was playing, you were 6 months contract, and then you were out in the open, and you know, trying to find a job. Well, who will give you a job for 6 months when you know you're going to have to either pack it in, walk away, because you've got your cricket contract coming?
This is On the Sporting Couch on Talk Sport. With me in the studio is former England pace bowler Steve Harmison.
Players Cricket Association does fantastic work, absolute market leaders. He's not there anymore, but Jason Ratcliffe, unbelievable. Raymond Richard Bevan, unbelievable guys at starting the mental health approach of finding a solution to the problem. And that is so important. And the young cricketers now, through platforms of likes of myself and what Marcus Truscothick went through and Jonathan Trott went through, and even though I was a little bit critical of Jonathan Trott when it actually happened, I still think there was an issue there. And for to come out and talk about it, speak about it, and push and say, right, you're not the only ones that are in this.
Why were you critical?
I was critical because of the terminology he was using. He came back, he did an interview straight after the Australian trip with Ian Ward. He sat in the gym and he was saying, I'm not a nutcase. I'm not a lunatic. I'm not sure if he said lunatic. He said, I'm not a nutcase. And I thought, really? Do people that suffer use that sort of them words when they say, I'm not a, when they're struggling? And I thought he was soft. I actually thought, well, you've just been bounced out 6 times. You know, you've walked away from a, you've walked away. But I think I probably owe him an apology for that. And he probably did feel, I probably understood a little bit now more than I did at the time, what he said, what he was trying to say. I think he was trying to show that sportsman's bravado, say, I'm a big, strong man. I'm not that bad. And I thought, well, and I was like, well, if you're not that bad, why did you come home? So I do believe there was an underlying problem there. And you know, when you're in the media, you have to give comment on what you feel is right at the actual time and what you've gone through. And I felt what I was going through, and I don't think I'd ever use the word nutcase. I remember crying my eyes out in McDonald's at Disneyland Paris.
Why?
Don't know. Couldn't tell you. Wife sitting in front of me. Kids sitting in front of me. I haven't a clue.
I'm going to see if we can do something I've never done on the radio before, but let's go there. I'd like you to close your eyes. I'd like you to go back. Just move into the microphone, if you would, Steve, so we can hear you. I'd like you to think about being in the McDonald's and all the visuals you can see in there, the counter, the burgers, the smells. And I'd like you to think about Steve Harmison crying. What's going through your mind?
I was quite anxious. I was shaking a little bit. The tears were coming. My wife was telling the kids to go and play in the play area. And we were not far off going away. And I always had a very big anxiety attacks before going away. And I can't remember which tour it was, but we were going away the week later. And it's not a case of I didn't want to go. It was a case of I just wanted to be there. It was like the thing for me was leaving home, getting to the hotel, spending the night at the hotel, doing the media stuff the next day, getting on a plane, getting to the hotel in another country. If you could just drop me in, drop me out, piece of cake.
So hang on, was the anxiety the getting there?
I think the anxiety of the realisation that I'm on holiday with my kids because I'm not going to see them for another. I'm with my family and I'm not going to see them for 3 months.
Yep. I think there's a clue in there, Steve, if you don't mind me saying so, because actually I'm going to replay your words to you. You said if you'd just pull me out at McDonald's and drop me down in the country I'm going to, I'd have been fine. So therefore, what we're looking for is the travel implications. And I am wondering whether you are actually frightened of your own self-destruction or something terrible happening to you in transit.
No, I don't think it was the in-transit bit. I think where it all comes down to and comes back to was that first ever trip I ever went on in Pakistan. I'd never really been out of the country. I think I'd been to Mallorca twice in my whole entire life. That was it. And my career was, it was fast forward like you'd not believe when we first started. I'd gone from playing under 17s cricket for Northumberland in first week in August. Nobody had ever heard of Steve Harmison. Nobody anywhere had heard of Steve Harmison. Steve Harmison wasn't even interested in playing cricket, or he was looking forward to the football season starting.
Because you're a big, big football fan,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah, big football fan. So I played this game of cricket against Durham, under 17s. I think it was the first week of August, last week of July, something like that. And all of a sudden, after playing that game, Jeff Cook from Durham, director of cricket, came to Northumberland and said, "Who's that? We want to have a look at him." And by the middle of September, I'd played 3 second team cricket matches for Durham at a senior level and played a first team cricket match. When I finished the first team cricket match, I then got picked for England under 19s. Never been in the England system at all. And within, I think, middle of November, I'm embarking on a tour to Pakistan, England under 19s, being away for Christmas. I lasted 3 nights before I was brain on Andrew Flintoff, who was captain, on his door saying, I've got to go home. I think I lasted 10 days altogether. And he was like, give it another day, help me loads. And then in the end, he makes a joke that he advised the management team to send me home so he could get some sleep, because it was like knocking on his door at stupid o'clock because I couldn't sleep. I think that scarred me big time on going away. I think it scarred me throughout my whole career.
But what you said to me in a telephone conversation we had before this recording was, I liked everybody thinking that I was homesick, but in fact, it wasn't homesickness, it was depression.
Mm. And I think the anxiety and everything that came with me being with over that going over away, I think got to me every time I was thinking about going away, and every time I was aware, the anxiety was really, really to a point, the only time that the biggest point was when we got to South Africa in 2004. The physio, luckily for me, the physio was very understanding. Kurt Russell, brilliant, great guy. And he had been with me throughout the whole years, and he knew everything about me from under-19s. And we were at altitude. We were in Joburg, we were hyperventilating. And I couldn't train. And it was the first time I'd got to a point where I can't train. I couldn't run.
I couldn't breathe properly.
The anxiety, the pit in my stomach. You know, I just wanted to lie on the floor. I was keep having to make excuses up my back sore. So I could literally physically lie down on my front and push myself up to do back stretches. And it wasn't for my back, it was because the stomach had churned so much. It was so solid that the airwaves weren't getting through. But I'm looking at the physio and I'm thinking, if this is what it is, I'm going home. Best bowler in the world time, I'm going home.
But a lot of this stuff, for me, is about fear.
Mm.
And there must have been a fear there for you, Steve. Let's just try and work out what the fear was. Was the fear that you'd never see your family again? Was the fear that you would make a fool of yourself and you'd be shamed into something? What was the fear?
Was it a fear? I didn't feel as though I was feared of anything. The one thing about me and my career, I'd always believed I wasn't feared of nobody. Nobody was better. I always believed I was better than anybody. No matter who I was playing, what I was playing, or where I was, I wasn't feared of anybody. I really didn't.
Yeah, but you described two things, if you don't mind me saying so. On the cricket pitch, I believe, and you've made it absolutely clear, you didn't mind bowling to any batsman, and you thought you were the best bowler that was knocking around at that particular time. I accept that. But take you off the cricket pitch, we're in a completely different ball game. There's where the fear lies.
That was the fear, yeah.
What was the off-the-pitch fear? That you would perhaps die? That you wouldn't see your family again? That somehow you'd be exposed as a fraud? What was the fear?
I'm not sure. I honestly don't know. The amount of time, I think, because of cricket the way it was, when you were off the field, you spent a lot of time off the field. And it was just the more and more thoughts going through your mind.
What were those thoughts? Try to explain.
Everything.
Give me a kid, for instance.
What's the kids doing now? And that's it. I'd be thinking, right, going there, should we go in there, should we go in there, should we go in there. But it wouldn't just be the kids. It would be, you know, I would get to a point where what I would do normally, so I'd go out on a Saturday or Sunday night, and I'd put myself back in that position. And it always became a negative thought that I'm not doing. It's not doing what I want to do, but.
So what you're actually describing is something the psychologists would call FOMS, fear of missing something. Is that what was going on for you? Did you wish you were not playing cricket, but you were back in the northeast with your mates, back with your family? You're missing out, quite literally missing out on another life.
Possibly.
Does that ring a few bells?
It rings a bell, but I think everybody is in that situation that played cricket. I'm sure they are. I can't believe that Andrew Flintoff wasn't thinking that. I can't believe Kevin Peterson wasn't thinking that when he ended up having family himself, Michael Vaughan. I can't believe anybody was different to me at that point.
But they were. Some of them wanted to be there and excel at cricket for their country.
I wanted to be there and excel for my country. I'm sure I loved playing cricket. I think everybody would be the same on that trip. If they've got kids, they'd be thinking, what's happening? Unless you've been on overseas tours and been in that sort of life environment, I think you realise them thoughts would be there. I think, I do believe the first tour I went on was something that I never really recovered from. Never really recovered from emotionally, because them feelings I was getting before I went to Pakistan and during Pakistan were the same feelings I had when I went on my next trip, and then when I went on my next trip, and then when I went on my last trip.
Just describe those feelings in their most severest form.
So the anxieties of, you know, the churn of the stomach, you know, not being able to, you know, struggling to eat, you know, the body just tightening up.
So what's what we call a somatic presentation, a physical presentation of the body, which is a psychosomatic illness.
I'm a bit simpler than that, and I didn't really understand that.
So is your body reacting to the pressures that your mind is under?
Yeah, probably is, yeah.
Those are some called somatic presentations.
But the sort of the lump in the throat that just doesn't go away, the pain and burning, churning in the stomach, the not being able to sleep is the biggest factor, and you're getting up tired and having to train the next day, and then it's just the vicious circle of going round and round and round of not being able to sleep, getting up early, not having enough energy to train, and then the stomach churns and the lumps go in, and it spirals from there.
I'm Gary Bloom. This is On the Sporting Couch. With me today, Steve Harmison, former England pace bowler. Still to come, Steve talks about his depression while playing for England on tour. You're listening to On the Sporting Couch here on Talk Sport. If you're finding life tough, Samaritans is there to listen. Call 24/7 free on 116 123 or visit samaritans.org.
You said to me when we spoke before the recording, Steve, that you grew up on a football touchline. And actually, I'm interested in the fact of you loving football and whether you are, in fact, a cricketer who fell into cricket by accident and really you should have been a footballer.
Yes, and yes, probably, yeah, I agree with that. But on the other hand, is I felt as though that's why I was better at cricket because of what you've just said. And the reason behind that is I think football would have been an obsession. And I think football would have been so much pressure where cricket wasn't as much of an obsession. I could take it or leave it. And I think that's what made me better. Good days were really good. Bad days were I could put them to one side and move on and get on with the next day. Where I think if it was football being the obsession, I think the bad day would have turned into another bad day, and I think the confidence would have gone from that. Where cricket, I was quite philosophical with cricket. It was something I was good at, I believed I was good at, and if I had a bad day, well, I didn't beat myself up too much. Possibly didn't understand cricket as much as I probably should have. You know, people talk about former cricketers, and they get them in to do the coaching this and coaching that, especially kids. And I'm not educated enough. I'm not qualified enough to coach these kids.
But you've coached football.
But I've coached football at an adult level.
Mm-hmm.
That's coaching men, coaching people, managing the football side of it. Was you're coaching? It's a bit like, you know, the psychological side of it. You're trying to make people understand, but and a good environment, happy environment. You know what the dressing room's like because you've just spent 15, 18 years in one. Coaching kids is completely different. Coaching kids is completely different. It's a different element because you're looking at different, you know, different techniques, different ways. And I think I'd struggle to do that. If I'm brutally honest, I'd struggle to do that.
How would you have coached a young Steve Harmison in his teens?
I'd have realised he probably was something different.
Different in what way?
Not the typical textbook. My action wasn't a typical textbook action. I think I might have been dangerous for somebody. And what I mean by that is my action was completely different to what the coaching manual was saying. The way I played cricket was different to 90% of the people that played at that same age, at that same level. But that's what made me be different and better, or something, you know, something with this X factor that I ended up having when I was in my mid-20s. And I think I would have, me personally, I'd embraced that. I'd have seen that straight away. If you were any good at sort of coaching or spotting, you'd see that straight away. And you'd try and help. And I think the coach I'll refer to is someone like Troy Cooley. And Troy Cooley was great at the spoken word, but he's also good at looking on working the computer screen from a technical point of view. And it would probably took him more the spoken word than it got from a technical point of view, where somebody different, he might go down the other way, where it would be more technical. than the spoken word.
You see, I wonder whether this is why you weren't picked up until 18-19, that nobody could recognise this unusual style you have as a cricketer.
I didn't play.
You didn't play at all?
No, I hardly played. Very rarely. I played football. I played football up until the football season finished. So that missed the first sort of 5-6 weeks of the cricket season. And I always been back to football from the all the way through my upbringing, from the age of 11 to 17.
Well, I wonder what you thought about cricket, whether it was a bit of a posho sport played by public schoolboys when you were growing up as a football nut, football mad young boy.
Possibly. I think the school in the northeast, in the way Northumberland Cricket, as Cricket Association. So not many came from sort of state schools. They came from the private education. And the clubs who had a little bit more financial resources. I came from Ashington.
Did that irritate you?
No, because I didn't understand it. I was 11, 12, 13-year-old.
This was another game another set of people.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered about that because 9 times out of 10, when you had like the county trials, I was playing football. I wasn't interested in playing cricket, I was playing football. Why am I going to get the county trials? I'm not going to play, I'm going to play football. And it wasn't until I got picked up at sort of 16, 17. Well, I'd played the counties under 13s and 15s. But it was, for me, pretty much it was take it or leave it. And if there was a football match on at the time, there wasn't no hope in hell I was going to play cricket.
I'm going to try something left of field here, Steve, and if I get this wrong, I'm going to apologise. But I'm wondering whether that slight cultural difference that you bring to the England team, international cricket, made it harder for you and increased the chances of you having anxiety attacks. You're not quite fitting in the same way as some of those other England internationals who have had a public school background and who have got used to being away, living in dormitory life, all that sort of thing, that they might have felt more at home on those tours.
No, I disagreed with that, because for the simple fact the people that were in and around my age group, there was just as many people like me from where I was come from than what there was. Now, that under-19 team I talk about that we went on, Zach Morris, Andrew Flintoff, Gareth Batty, they were from the sort of Yorkshire, harder Yorkshire areas, Lancashire, Fred Andrew was from Preston. So, and then when you looked at the cricket team that I played in, I felt at home. I had Matthew Hoggard from, another guy from Yorkshire, Paul Collingwood, who I played a lot of cricket with at Durham, was, Shotley Bridge, Consett, another coal mining area. Darren Goff, our very own Talk Sports. Darren Goff from Barnsley. So, these people got through and they were there and we were all the same. And so to say it was a class thing when I grew up, no, I think there was teams picked at under-11s all the way to 12s to 13s, possibly with that in mind. I probably wasn't as good as them kids at 11, 12, 13. I started to excel at 14, 15, 16, but I still didn't play a great deal of cricket.
I'm going to go back to something that we've already covered, but I'm still keen to get to the bottom of this idea of where this anxiety comes from. And you say it's a little bit to do with the fear of missing out of what's going on the other side of the world, and it's a little bit to do with personal safety when I'm getting from place A to place B. What's the bit that's missing here that we haven't nailed so far? Because we've got bits of it, but we haven't got all of it.
Honestly, I'm not exactly sure.
You must have asked yourself this question hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times.
I don't think I have, because I don't really want to. I probably don't want to know the answer. If I'm honest, I don't really want to know that answer.
And if you did know the answer?
If I did know the answer, I think that might make it worse, because it might think that is something even worse wrong with. I just felt the anxiety. I became quickly on how to manage it. And it was right. I was more occupying myself on how I managed the thing than what was causing it. Well, I knew, no matter what I thought it was to manage it, if it was going away from home, I couldn't stop doing that because it stopped us playing cricket for England. If it was missing out, well, that couldn't, I couldn't affect that because I still had to go away because that was what I wanted to do, was play cricket for England. If there was anything else other deeper than that, I really didn't want to know because I didn't want anything to stop me going away for playing for England. So what I did feel was, this is how I feel. This is what helps me by, you know, writing things down, talking to people. You know, Freddie, Rob Key, two of my best mates. You know, they were agony aunts for years and years, and probably wouldn't have gotten through half the tours I did if it wasn't for them, just by talking to them. And they weren't even listening half the time, probably, which I'm grateful for. But it was, I was more on the how do I get through it rather than what's actually causing it.
I'm interested in the relationship with Mum because I think we're getting somewhere here. Mm. I think it's Mum who makes you feel safe in the
probably.
World.
Probably. I wouldn't disagree with that.
You go away from the maternal bosom. Mm. You go away from that. And the question is then, how are you safe?
Possibly, yeah. I wouldn't disagree that when I first went away, I think we went away first of December, and I think I met Haley. I think it was at the 15th of November when I met Haley for the first time.
So this maternal looking after, the baton passes from Mum to Haley.
Probably, yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that.
If there was one person that could have been with you in Pakistan that would have changed everything, who would that have been?
If I was going back and you're saying close your eyes and go back to that point, I don't think anybody would have helped me through that period. I think it was me and me alone. And what I mean by that, I think it was the culture shock of leaving England. I think probably I did have the anxiety of leaving Mum, family, everything, early after just meeting her. And then going to Pakistan and the culture shock of what I was witnessing over there. I don't want to be disrespectful to somebody else's country or anything like that, but it's not England. It's not what you get when you go down a street. It is completely different. You know, it's a lot hotter. It air's a lot more polluted. There's a lot more people. It's a lot more, you feel out your comfort zone, a lot more of a hostile atmosphere. And I think because of that, I think that was the underline and bang. And I think you could have anybody with me. You could have the whole lot with me. And I still think I'd have probably felt that way.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is On the Sporting Couch on Talk Sport. Still to come, Steve talks about his England career and the ups and downs about being away on tour. Steve, you talk about playing with pressure. The pressure doesn't get much higher than playing in an Ashes series. Tell me the highs and lows of playing Ashes cricket.
Well, they're simple, to be fair. The 2005 when we won it, and then the very first ball in Brisbane.
The worst ball ever bowled, apparently.
Apparently so. Where do you want to start? The highs of winning, even when I went into management, the football side, you won a game. And I made sure you celebrate when you win. If you have a beer or you have whatever, you celebrate when you win. Because there's not a better feeling in the world than winning. And you've got to get to a point where in your life that when you get beat, it hurts, but it doesn't go too far. And I felt as though that I had that in me. I had that. That was something I was quite good at. That if we got beat, I could take defeat and say, well played. And then take bits off it on how I got beat, how we got beat, and try and put things better the next time. So when we won the Ashes, it was a great elation. You know, that's the best team, arguably the best team that's ever played the game of cricket, that Australia side. And you need an element of luck, and we got that. And we had passages of brilliance, and a collective unit beat a couple of individuals, because the collective unit was England's 12 that played. Paul Collingwood only played a little part at the Oval. It was a collective unit, played a team who were, very much an individual side after they lost their best player in the second game, which, from a psychological point of view, little things happened just to keep building England's feel-good factor. McGrath getting injured, then things going our way at Old Trafford, to then winning at Trent Bridge, and then nearly losing it, but Peterson got us, Warne drops that catch, who was absolutely brilliant, one of their best individuals, and Peterson got us over the line with an unbelievable innings at the Oval. And then the celebration was what was expected of a group of blokes, and we can go and I do the after dinner stuff for ages about that bus trip and whether it was the right thing. It was the right thing to celebrate. It was just at the wrong time, because I felt it was disrespectful to Australia to have a celebration like that while they were still in the country. If we had waited another 24 hours, they would have been in the air and they wouldn't have seen it. And I think that was their determination to go to Australia when we went over there. And there's a lot of talk in the media and the press and how we go about it, how we went about that trip. And if everything went our way in 2005, nothing went our way in 2006-07.
Tell me about that opening ball.
I'll come into that, because the reason why I say nothing went our way was we lost about three players, and it had nothing to do with the opening ball, or Andrew Flintoff was captain instead of Andrew Strauss, why England got beat 5-0 in that series. We were underprepared. Little bits of luck didn't go our way. I was in a position where I was underprepared in a physical way, because the game before, the four-day game beforehand in Adelaide, I just felt my side, 10 o'clock in the morning. The toss was in half an hour. And I wasn't sure whether if it was a torn side, which if you try and push it and it goes, that's 8 weeks. That's a whole series gone.
Yeah.
So I went down the cautious route. We pulled out of that test, that 4-day game. Got a little bit of preparation going into Brisbane, but I was nowhere near prepared to go in. And the first ball showed that, because I tried to bowl too hard. Bowl too fast. I was trying too hard. We were all pumped up. No, there wasn't just one person. But then all of a sudden, got to the point, end of the mark, and you sort of, I wouldn't say froze, but lost all train of thought of what I was trying to do. And then I haired in, as in probably ran in as quick as I would run in for maybe the fifth ball and not the first ball. And it just went all awry. I tried too hard, pulled left side, came out far too early. And literally between that and that was the difference between where the ball ended up, because it came right over the top of the perpendicular from your action point of view, and it bounced off. So when people ask you how long did that last, And I tell this in the, again in the after dinner stuff, where I'll say I visualised what had happened, and you make the odd little wisecrack and funny remark. But I always say, on a serious note, it lasted for about 8 hours. Because, and why I say the 8 hours, I thought mentally, from a mental strength point of view, that was one of the best trips I'd ever been on. Because that whole, once I'd bowled that ball, I vowed that if I'm playing in the next game, in the next game, in the next game, I'm not going off, I'm not going to hide, I'm going to make sure I am involved in every part. And I got better throughout the series. But that ball, when I finished the day's play, I bowled maybe a dozen overs. And then at the end of the day's play, we went back, kids are there, and they're not bothered what dad's done throughout the day. They just want some tea, they want to go swimming, or crayons and drawing and stuff like that, because we're relatively small at the time. And I watched the news, because I thought, there's no point watching Australian TV, because it's going to be all over. They got 300 and odd for two, they were all over us. And at 8 o'clock at night, I put Sky News on, and there it was. England starts. Harmison bowls the first ball to flint off its slip. Ashes have gone already. Fair enough. There it was. And then the next newsreel was there was two soldiers killed in Afghanistan. For the first two in a certain province. And that upset me. That really, really upset me to the point. Because I was first and that was second. It was a sport. It was sport, and this was real life, and it really hit me. It really hit home to me, and thinking, yeah, I'm playing sport here, and I'm watching a TV program, a newsreel, an English newsreel, where two people, fighting for their country, have lost their life on that very afternoon, and I've bowled a ball which has gone a little bit awry. I got a chance to come back and bowl again and again and again. And it upset me in a way that I thought, is this what it is? Is this what life's come to? That's first on a national news program. And, somebody dying, fighting for their country second. And it got to me. Whether it was right to get to me or not, it got to me. It really upset me.
When you say got to you, what was the emotion?
The emotion was of embarrassment. I felt as I was shame. Yeah, I cuddled the kids and I was upset. I'd lumped my throat and I couldn't believe what I'd just witnessed. And then I realised after that, nothing else is going to get to me. If this is what it is, nothing else is going to affect me from that. I'm going to go out and I'm going to try and enjoy everything I do. I'm not going to get upset for what's just happened because of what I've just witnessed. And I think it really put up, from a mental point of view, I just thought, I can't believe what I've just witnessed. And I'm not going to let it get to me. I'm not going to let that ball get to me. I'm going to make sure I'm going to enjoy what I do. And if it does happen again, I'm just going to try and smile, go back through, and I'm going to do it all again. And if it was like, if I'm never good enough after this, and that ball is going to define my career, and I never play again, I'm not actually that, at that point in time, I think I was more, I'm not actually that bothered. But the one thing I am telling myself is I'm not going to let this game affect me anymore. And that's why I think from that moment, I was quite easy going with what I was doing on a cricket field.
Just coming more up to date, do you think the modern cricketer is playing too much cricket and is under the worse psychological pressure than you were under?
Yes, I think they are, but I don't blame them. The vast amount of money that's to be earned now in the Big Bash, the Indian Premier League, the Test match fees you get, the one-day national fees, 2020 fees you get, I think you'd have to be careful on an individual basis on if you are managing and monitoring that. But I don't think you can stop them because of what's on offer. I'd be concerned that somebody might burn out and just maybe fall to pieces because of the amount of time they are aware.
And if somebody playing cricket today came and knocked on your door and said, Mr. Harmison, I'm under so much psychological pressure, I want to give it up, I don't want to tour, I'm anxious, I'm nervous, I'm depressed, What advice would he give to them, Steve, today?
I'd put them in the passenger seat of my car and take them to somebody who, like yourself or the doctor that I seen at the Priory who helped me, I'd sit in the waiting room and say, did that help you? And then talk to them there and back about cricket to try and keep them involved in the game. If they still want to be playing the game, if they enjoy the game, and try and keep them in the game. If that didn't work, you try something different to try and keep them in the game. And if that didn't work, take them to the PCA, Players Cricket Association, and try and help them in their afterlife to get them in a position to go through one door and in through another. Because I always described it, when I left the game of cricket, it was like coming out of the supermarket with a great big heavy bags of shopping and not knowing where your car is. That's all I felt when I came out of the game. It was like, and it was, as they're getting heavier and heavier, that is because the kids need this. Mortgage needs paying. Car needs paying. Insurance, because I'd gone from 18 years of what to wear, what to do, where to be, what to eat, what bus to get on. There's your boots, go out and play. And it stops. And when it stops, that reality is dangerous. And I think the PCA are market leaders in sport. And I think other sports could take lead from that. And I'd love to see them do it. And if they ever needed anybody to help, I'd push them in the right direction. Because what would you do if somebody came and knocked on your door? I'd hold their hand and take them to the PCA and take them to people who know what they're doing, because they've had a lot of experience in the game of cricket.
Steve Harmison, been a privilege talking to you. Many thanks for joining me on The Sporting Couch.
Cheers, Gary. Thanks.
I hope you've enjoyed the show, and there are some useful links on the TalkSport website, talksport.com/sporting-couch. And you can listen to the show again by googling Acast on The Sporting Couch. You can contact me at @bloomers57 on Twitter. I'd be delighted to hear from you. I'm Gary Bloom, sports psychotherapist. And please remember, there's no such thing as good health without good mental health. Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.